Maseches Chulin, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Gimel, and full Perek Aleph, Mishnah Vav. The first two prokim of Maseches Chulin talk about the procedure of slaughtering an animal. The first two Mishnayos discussed who is able to slaughter and when one is able to slaughter, as well as what instrument needs to be used in order to slaughter the animal. Now the Mishnayos start to talk about the slaughtering itself and the location on the neck of the animal where the slaughtering is supposed to take place. Now, for a regular animal, that is to exclude a bird, the shechita, the slaughtering, consists of cutting through both the windpipe and the food pipe. The windpipe is known as the kone, and sometimes it's also known as the gargeres. It has two different names, the kone or the gargeres, and the food pipe is called the veshet. Now, the truth is, even if one cuts only through the majority of each of those pipes, the kone and the veshet, the windpipe and the food pipe, that is also good enough. Even ideally, that is a perfectly valid slaughtering. Now, surrounding the windpipe, the kone, also known as the gargeres, surrounding this windpipe are many rings of cartilage, which is a certain type of tissue in the body which connects and keeps different organs firm. So surrounding the windpipe are many rings of cartilage. However, these rings are not full rings. They surround the vast majority of the windpipe, but they are not full total rings such that they don't surround the entire windpipe. However, the top ring of the windpipe is called the tabas gedola, the large main ring, and that is a full ring which surrounds the entire windpipe, and it's also a bit larger than the rest of the rings of cartilage. Now, on top of this tabas gedola, this larger ring of cartilage, there are other pieces of cartilage which are sort of on top of the windpipe. And in terms of the requirement for where exactly on the windpipe the knife needs to cut through, it needs to be below the other pieces of cartilage which are on top of the windpipe. One needs to cut through the windpipe itself, coming from the side of the windpipe. And if somebody slaughters the animal in the wrong location, for example, he slaughters it via the pieces of tissue and cartilage on top of the windpipe, then that is an invalid shechita, and this invalidation is known as hagroma. We're going to see there are five main invalidations of the slaughtering. One of them we've already seen in the first couple of Mishnayos, that's called ikur. Ikur is if the wrong sort of knife is used, one with jagged edges. That is the invalidation of ikur, and this Mishnah is discussing the invalidation of hagroma. So the Mishnah says, Hashechi metecha tabas, one who slaughters and cuts through the area which is within the large ring at the top. The knife starts cutting through from the side of the windpipe, starts cutting through this large ring of tissue and cartilage at the top of the windpipe. We're not talking about the pieces of tissue and cartilage on top of the windpipe, but rather this is at the top of the windpipe of all of these rings which go up and up and up. And this is the top ring of cartilage which goes around the windpipe. So this is considered to be a valid place of doing the slaughtering. As long as v'shir bo meloi hachut al pnei kula, as long as he leaves there remaining at least a hairbreadth of the tabas gedola, of this ring of cartilage around the windpipe, so there is still surrounding the windpipe, all around it at the top, some level of cartilage, then his slaughtering would be valid. However, if you were to start the slaughtering, even if you start it in a valid fashion, from the side and you slaughter it through the, you start cutting through the upper ring, but then you end up pointing the knife and changing direction to go upwards, such that you don't cut through this ring until you get to the other side, but rather the end of your action of cutting through the windpipe, you're in an invalid place. You end the slaughtering by cutting it through the upper pieces of cartilage and tissue on top of the windpipe, which is not a valid location for performing the slaughtering. So in that case, it would be an invalid slaughtering. However, Rabbi Yosef bar Yehuda says it's enough that you leave melei achut al pnei ruba, a hairbreadth of the upper ring of cartilage, for the majority. So that means that you cut from the side of the windpipe through the majority of the windpipe and the upper ring. Once you've done that, then there will be no problem to change the direction of the knife and end up cutting through and taking the knife out of the pieces of cartilage and tissue on top of the windpipe. And Rabbi Bar Yehuda's reasoning is quite simple. Because like we mentioned before, one only needs to cut through the majority of each of the pipes, the windpipe and the food pipe, for the slaughtering to be valid. There is no requirement to cut through the entire pipe. And therefore, as soon as one has cut through the majority in a valid way, the rest of the action which you do is totally irrelevant because the slaughtering is already valid. On the other hand, the first opinion in the Mishnah of the Tanakhama holds that since at the end of the day your action of slaughtering did go through the entire windpipe, so we look at all of it as being part of the slaughtering, and therefore if the end of that action of slaughtering is in an invalid location, then the entire slaughtering will be invalid. Mishnah Dalet, when slaughtering birds, there is one fundamental difference in the slaughtering, and that is that one does not need to cut through both the windpipe, the koneh, or the gargeres, as well as the food pipe, the veshet, but rather it's enough to cut through just one of them, either the koneh or the veshet, the windpipe or the food pipe. However, when it comes to slaughtering birds which are being bought as korbonos, there is an entirely new procedure which is introduced, and that is called melika. Melika is when the kohen who is going through the process of bringing that korban, that sacrifice, he would use his nail, which was very sharp, to cut through the back of the neck of the bird. And the truth is, as well as cutting one of the pipes, because he's bringing his nail in from the back of the bird specifically, as the Torah requires, he would end up cutting through the bone of the neck of the bird. And that is a process of melika which the Torah describes. Which is interesting, because in general, if even in the middle of one's act of slaughtering, he causes a puncture or another sort of internal blemish inside the animal, then he would turn that animal into a trefa. An animal which has an internal blemish is not able to be eaten. Even if that blemish, that wound, only comes as a result of the slaughtering. However, in a case where the Torah explicitly says that the way to slaughter the animal, for example the bird, is a way which cuts through the bone of the neck of the animal, so even though technically speaking that should turn the animal into a trefa, because the slaughtering itself is only achieved by cutting through the windpipe or the food pipe, not the bone of the neck. However, since that is a part of the process, it would not deem the animal as a trefa. This mission discusses the differences between a regular shechita, a slaughtering of either a regular animal or even a bird. In a case where the bird is not being bought as a korban, so it requires a regular slaughtering. The only difference being is that only the food pipe or the windpipe need to be cut through, unlike a regular animal where both the food pipe and the windpipe need to be cut through. But in terms of the essential act of slaughtering of shechita, it is the same. On the other hand, we have melika, which is a unique process of cutting through the neck of the animal, which applies only to a bird which is being bought as a korban. Hashrich min hatzdodin, one who slaughters a animal from the side of the neck, shechitase kashera, his slaughtering is perfectly valid, and this is even an ideal way to slaughter it. However, malik min hatzdodin, one who performs melika on the bird which is being bought as a korban from the side of its neck, if you put the nail of the kohen, if he sticks his nail through the side of the neck, melikose pasula, his melika would be invalid, because the Torah explicitly states that it needs to be done mimul orpoi, from the back of his neck. Next scenario, hashechit min ha'oyev, one who does a regular shechita, regular slaughtering, from the back of the neck of the animal. Shechitase pasula, his slaughtering will be invalid, because by doing this he would end up cutting through the bone of the neck of the animal, which is not a part of the slaughtering, and he would thereby turn the animal into a trefa. Since the slaughtering can be done from a different direction, so it's not necessary to cut through the bone of the neck, and therefore it would turn into a trefa, which is unlike hamolik min ha'oreif, when he performs melika on a bird from the back of its neck, melikose kasheira, his melika will be valid, even though he cuts through the bone of the neck, since melika, the Torah requires that it has to be done from the back of the neck. So inevitably, he's going to end up cutting through the bone of the neck. That doesn't invalidate it, because the Torah explicitly says that you should do it from the back. However, a regular shechita, a regular slaughtering, which doesn't need to be done from the back, so if it's done from the back and he does cut through the bone of the neck, it would turn the animal into a trefa, which cannot be eaten. Now, according to this, if he does manage to pull the windpipe and the food pipe, pull it around the bone of the neck, and that way he would manage to cut through the pipes without cutting through the bone of the neck,
So in that way, it would indeed be valid. The Mishnah is talking about a regular case where he doesn't do all of that, and therefore, if he cuts through the bone of the neck, the slaughtering would be invalid because the entire animal is now turned into a trefa which cannot be eaten. Third scenario, Hashechim Natsavar, one who slaughters, he performs the Shechita from the front of the neck, Shechitose Kesheira. His slaughtering is considered valid. Hamolim Natsavar, but one who performs the Malika on the bird which is being brought as a korban from the front of the neck, Malikose Pesula. That Malika would be invalid since the Torah explicitly requires that it be done from the back of the bird's neck. Now the Mishnah summarizes what comes out of here. Shekolo Oirev Kosher LeMalika. The entire back of the neck is a valid location, a valid direction, really, for the Malika to take place. V'cholat Tzavor Kosher LeShchita. And the entire rest of the neck, the front and the side of the neck, is a valid place for the knife to cut through for the sake of a regular slaughtering, a regular Shechita. Nimtzoyed emerges that Kosher B'Shechita Posel B'Malika. That which is valid for Shechita, regular slaughtering, is invalid for a Malika, this unique type of slaughtering with the nail of the Kohen, for a bird sacrifice. And the same goes the opposite way around. Kosher b'Malika, posel b'Shechita. That which is valid for Malika is invalid for Shechita. Mishnah Hey, the rest of the Mishnahs of this Perek go quite sidetracked to list lots of other examples where we find that something which is valid for item A is invalid for item B, and that which is valid for item B is invalid for item A. There are two different types of birds which can be bought potentially as bird korbanos. One category are toirim, and the other are b'nei yoyna. These are two different types of birds, two different types of doves, and it is learnt from the way that the Torah describes these birds that toirim are only valid once they have fully matured and are adult birds, whereas b'nei yoyna, as their name suggests, b'nei yoyna, the children, the sons of a dove, they are only valid when they have not yet matured and they are child birds. And that's what the Mishnah says, kosher b'toirin, the age and the stage of maturity which is valid for bringing toirim as korbanos, possible b'nei yoyna, is an invalid stage for the b'nei yoyna, whereas kosher b'nei yoyna, the valid stage of maturity for the b'nei yoyna, which is when they are younger, posel b'toirim, would be invalid for toirim, because toirim are only valid once they have fully matured. Now the Mishnah adds, there's also a middle stage, where the bird is sort of maturing, and techilas hatzihuv, that is at the beginning of the stage where the bird's neck is yellowing, that would be invalid for both Toirin and B'nei Yoyna, because it's not considered to be a child bird which has not matured at all. And at the same time, it's not considered to be a fully matured adult bird. So during that middle stage, it would be invalid to bring the bird as a korban, whether we're talking about Toirin or B'nei Yoyna. Mishnah Vav, the Pora Adumo is a red cow, which is very rare, and there had to be a fully red cow, which they would burn, and the ashes of that red cow were made into a solution, and anybody who became Tomei from a dead body, in order to be purified, had to be sprinkled with the solution, which contained the ashes of a Pora Adumo, this red cow. The item which the Mishnah is going to compare the Pora Adumo to is an Egla Arufa, which is also a cow, a young cow. In a case where a body is found to have been killed outside of a city, then the Beis Din would measure the nearest city, and members of the Beis Din of that city had to come, they had to go through a whole process, an entire procedure where they would bring a calf to a stream of water, and they would break the neck of that calf. So the Mishnah says, Kosher b'pora, the valid way of killing the Pora Aduma, and that is a regular slaughtering, a regular shechita, posel b'egla, is an invalid way of carrying out the procedure of breaking the neck of an egla arufa. Whereas kosher b'egla, the valid way of breaking the neck of the egla arufa, they would chop off its head without doing it in a regular way of slaughtering. They kill the animal from the back of its neck. That would be posel b'pora, an invalid way of killing the pora aduma, because that would be an invalid shechita, an invalid slaughtering. Next example, kosher b'kranim, the valid age to serve in the Beis HaMikdash as a kohen, which is as soon as the man becomes mature, when he becomes bar mitzvah, essentially, and there is no upper limit for the kohen to be able to continue serving the Beis HaMikdash. Posel b'leviim, this includes invalid ages for the leviim to serve in the Beis HaMikdash.
during the times of the Mishkan, which was the sort of temporary Beis HaMikdash, which could be transported from place to place in the Midbar, in the desert, the role of the Levium was to carry the parts of the Mishkan and the utensils of the Mishkan. And the Torah says that they are able to do that from the age of 30 until the age of 50. So the ages lower than that and older than that would be ages which are valid for a Kohen, but invalid for a Levi to serve. And the truth is, even once the Beis HaMikdash was fixed in Yerushalayim, and the role of the Levium was to guard the Beis HaMikdash and to sing, and that could be done even for those who are older than 50 years old. Nevertheless, as soon as their voice was no longer as it was when they were younger, and they were not able to sing properly, then they would indeed no longer be able to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, such that even once the Beis HaMikdash was built, there was an upper limit for the Levium, which did not exist for the Kohanim. On the other hand, kosher b'Levium, those Levium who are valid to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, include a category which are posel b'Kohanim, invalid for Kohanim, and this is referring to Levium who have some sort of wound on their body. They are nevertheless able to serve and perform their role in the Beis HaMikdash, whereas a Kohen is not able to perform the service if he has a wound or blemish on his body. The next part of the Mishnah talks about tumah, impurity, and there are different rules for different materials. For example, tahor b'chlicheres, that which would be pure and it wouldn't make a earthenware utensil tomei. This is referring to a situation where a source of tumah, such as certain dead insects, if the source of tumah touches the outside of a earthenware utensil, it would not become tomei, which is unlike all other materials, tomei b'kol hakelim, that would make all other utensils tomei, impure. On the other hand, tahor b'kol hakelim, there is a situation which, for all other utensils, the source of tumah would not make it tomei, but tomei b'chlicheres, it would make the earthenware utensil tomei. And this is referring to a situation where the source of tumah entered into the inside of the utensil, but it didn't touch the utensil at all. For most utensils, for most materials, that would not make it tomei, but there is a unique law regarding earthenware utensils that it would become tomei. Tahor b'chle'eitz, a wooden utensil which is not fit to become impure at all, and this is referring to a wooden utensil which cannot hold something, it's flat. Tomei b'chle'matreis, if you have a parallel item which is metal, even if it can't hold something, it can still become tomei. Whereas tahor b'chle'matreis, a metal utensil which is not fit to become impure at all, and this is referring to a metal utensil whose work has not yet been completed, and the plan of the person who owns it is to continue to add on and improve that utensil. If that's the case, then even if technically speaking you are able to use the utensil, the law is that it still cannot become tomei. However, tomei b'chle'etz, if you have a parallel case with a wooden utensil, as long as it is fit for use, it would be able to become tomei. And the final example of this Mishnah is regarding the laws of tithes. One is obligated to separate certain tithes to give as gifts to Kohanim or Levim or poor people. And the law is that one is only obligated to separate tithes from produce which is fit for eating. And as such, the Mishnah says, Achayav bashkedim hamorim, the type of bitter almonds which are obligated in tithes, and this refers to bitter almonds which are small and haven't been left to grow until they are much bigger, and that is because they are only fit for eating when they are smaller and less bitter. Potter ramasukim would be exempt from tithes in a parallel case of sweeter almonds, because the sweeter almonds are not fit for eating when they are smaller and less ripe, and therefore they would not be an obligation of tithes. Whereas achayvam sukim, the sweet almonds which are obligated in tithes, and that refers to those which have been left to grow until they are larger and fully ripe, and thus fit for eating, potter b'amorim would be exempt in a parallel case of bitter almonds, because those bitter almonds, if they are left to ripen fully, are too bitter to be eaten, and would therefore not be obligated in tithes.